At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. North American Tea Conference attendees discuss the power of collaboration. Kenya is making big plans to celebrate its tea centenary, and S&P downgrades Lipton parent company CVC Capital Partners. Plus, the resilience of intercropping. Tea is a principal source of livelihood for 9 million small and medium-sized producers who account for 60% of global tea production. According to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, they are the backbone of the sector. But cultivating only tea is not sustainable, according to the International Institute for Sustainable Development. Quote, tea is extremely vulnerable to climate-related events, so it is vital to promote measures such as planting drought and stress-resistant cultivars, diversifying production, and intercropping tea, end quote. Incorporating mixed cropping can lead to a more resilient, sustainable, and profitable tea farming system, especially for smallholders with limited resources who need to optimize their land use and reduce risk. Rural entrepreneurs Ashok Kuria and his son Rowan, who own and manage Balanore Plantations in South India, join us today to discuss the importance of intercropping to sustain tea and coffee farms. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Tea stakeholders globally engaged in a three-day conversation on the power of collaboration at the North American Tea Conference, NATC, near Toronto, Canada. Sessions included a briefing on market conditions in the U.S. and Canada, a session on food service opportunities in tea, and discussions on regulatory initiatives advancing the bioactive components of tea. Participants adjourned from panel discussions to roundtable sessions where attendees drilled down to arrive at constructive suggestions. Several speakers, including Madhuri Nanda, representing Rainforest Alliance, and Lehman Brody, who heads COSA, the Committee on Sustainable Assessment, address the urgency of restoring sustainable production. Brody cited important initiatives such as Farmer Chat, a computer-assisted telephone interview system, and regenerative agriculture in Assam in partnership with TRA India and Bhumitra to promote soil health and carbon sequestration. Production updates describe the harvest and market conditions in Argentina, which are not so good, Australia, which are great, China, which is domestic-focused, Malaysia, which is expanding, India, which is stable, Sri Lanka, which is recovering, and Kenya, booming and celebrating 100 years of commercial cultivation. Labor shortages are common problems for both tea and herbals, explained Richard Endicott, owner of Meridian Trading in Boulder, Colorado, who described the challenges of wild harvesting. Chapman Weber, president of the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada, organized the annual event. It offers a dynamic forum for sharing by 115 attendees, including growers, traders, government officials, and retailers. The venue alternates between the U.S. and Canada, and this year's gathering at Niagara on the Lake in Ontario. Noted tea adventurer Jeff Fuchs delivered a beautifully photographed keynote presentation rooted in people, with images of diverse people drawn to tea. He said all it takes is time, a beverage, and a bit of provocation to establish relationships over tea. Peter Goji, president of the Tea Association of the USA, described conditions in the U.S. market. Ian Gibbs, chair of the International Tea Committee, called on the industry to help define the organization's role in the stewardship and sharing of essential data in years to come. Takeaways include Carmen Allison, Vice President of Sales Development for Nielsen IQ North America. Allison described the impact of inflation and consumer behavior trends. He said 42% of Canadians feel financially worse off, with 15% feeling better. Inflation rates have slowed but remain high at 2% globally, 1.2% in North America, and 10% in Latin America. Tea consumption is up 6% in Canada and 2% in the U.S. Consumers focus on value and sustainability, with 71% willing to switch brands for lower prices and 66% for sustainable products. Private label sales are growing, with 18.9% of the U.S. and 19% in Canada. The discussion emphasized the need for strategic pricing and reaching more consumers to drive growth. Margot Swindoll, Director of Business Development at Technomic, quote, writes, "Burger restaurants used to thrive and survive and make a ton of margin on soda and pop. Well, all restaurants or cuisine types now need to offer tea, hot and cold. Many are really focused on the cold and cold execution. They need to do this because there hasn't been a ton of innovation in the burger space. Let's face it. And they want to attract traffic. So if you want flavors and origins expanded out into the marketplace, the way to do this is to leverage it with food service operators. And these food service operators are very open and anxious to hear from the tea industry," end quote, she said. This is Dan Bolton reporting at the North American Tea Conference. And joining me today on the podcast is David Muriki. He's the Deputy Director of Trade Advisory with the Tea Board of Kenya. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I want you to tell us about that special event coming up in November.
Thank you for having me. This year, 2024, is a very special year for the tea industry in Kenya. We are celebrating the monumental achievement. It's a commemoration of 100 years since tea was introduced to Kenya. Tea was introduced in Kenya in 1903 by C.W. Cain around Limuru, but commercial cultivation was formally introduced in 1924. That is when, as a country, we began to cultivate tea commercially. This year marks 100 years. It's a centennial celebration of the hard work of the people of Kenya along the value chain to appreciate the industry thus far.
Tell me a little about the activities, the event.
So this is a culmination, there are several activities that have been earmarked to celebrate the 100 years. We'll start off with a tea marathon in the West of Rift region, in the lush green tea estates of Kericho, where it's really fun, but to appreciate the heritage around the tea growing and demystify and educate the population of the unique achievements of the tea industry for 100 years. We'll move to the East of Rift and Ava Heritage Week from the 3rd to the 9th of November. We are collaborating and partnering with various institutions and university, the Karatina University, to commemorate all appreciate, especially the smallholder tea subsector. The first smallholder tea factory was commissioned in the great county of Nyeri, and activities around that particular great county for the whole week. Then the culmination will be the Kenya Tea Summit, which is the event. We can say this is the main celebration for the 100 years, the Kenya Tea Summit, from the 14th to the 16th of November, happening at the coastal city of Mombasa. As you very well know, Mombasa is a tea hub for the entire region. So this will be the highlight, the main highlight of the event at the White Sands Hotel, beach resort and spa. We'll also have a tea exhibition running alongside. We've invited dignitaries, tea manufacturers, producers, everybody along the value chain. A story is told of Kenya tea for each and every stakeholder. And it is that celebration from the tea grower to the producer, to the packer, to the buyer, to the international partners. We have a theme for this particular event. We are saying 100 years of serving Kenya tea to the world. We're targeting over 300 international guests and many more local stakeholders and partners who would like to sit together and deliberate the future of the Kenya tea industry, at the same time celebrate the milestones and achievement of the tea industry in Kenya. Yeah.
And how does one go about attending?
Already the e-shirt and the e-poster is live on our website, www.tboard.or.ke. There's a live link where you can now click and register to the various events that I've enumerated, starting with the marathon, to the Heritage Week, and finally to the Kenya Tea Summit, which is the highlight event of the Kenya Centenary 100 Year Celebrations. It's quite user-friendly, very interactive, and you'll be done within a minute. Yeah, everything is online.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's an
thank exciting
you.
Event.
Thank you. I hope to see you in Mombasa for the 14th to the 16th of November. As we say, karibu sana. Kenya kuna matata.
Thank you.
Again. Thank you. Asante.
Financial ratings firm Standard & Poor's cited financial weakness at Lipton Tea and Infusions in downgrading parent company CVC Capital Partners. S&P wrote, quote, within the recently revised company guidance for full year 2024, the group anticipates a year-on-year decline in net sales and negative reported free cash flow of 200 to 250 million euros. That's about 225 to 280 million U.S. dollars. Lipton has experienced sizable operating pressures and volume decline, down 16.4% in 2023 and down 10.3% in the first half of 2024, excluding tea estates that were sold in the first quarter of 2024. This resulted in much weaker than anticipated operating performance, according to S&P. S&P's credit rating for the company declined from B- to CCC+. Under our base key, they write, metrics for 2024 are significantly weaker than our previous expectations. S&P primary credit analyst Celine Huang writes that revenue contracted 7.5% year over year to about 800 million euros due to a volume decline of about 10% that was only partially offset by price increases totaling 4%. Shipments to Pakistan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia, which account for 80% of the loss in volume, drove this decline, stemming from higher competition from local players and the loss of some retail distribution due to changes in price and SKU rationalization. S&P writes that Lipton had a substantial cash burden of over 300 million euros, about 355 million USD, in related cash interest and capital investment. In line with company's budget, quote, our base case assumes a good recovery in the second half of 2024. We understand the company is focusing on regaining distribution to keep scale, some promotional activities, reintroducing select SKUs and reducing overhead costs by 20 to 30% in the second half of 2024 compared to the first. Bloomberg News reports that when CVC Capital Partners bought Lipton for $4.5 billion in 2021, quote, banks ended up offloading some of the debt due to finance the buyout at a discount after markets were roiled by high interest rates and geopolitical uncertainty, end quote. High working capital needs and costs have prompted Lipton to draw on its revolving credit facility, leaving 325 million euros remaining as of June, according to S&P. That gives the company limited flexibility under the debt facility, which was a springing covenant. It comes into play if Lipton taps its revolver again. Quote, we could lower the ratings on the next 12 months if Lipton's liquidity position weakens further, such as through a financial covenant breach, end quote, the analyst wrote. 2 weeks ago, Lipton CEO Nathalie Roos resigned, citing personal reasons. Roos, a former chief executive at L'Oreal, led Lipton for 2 years after the acquisition from Unilever. Until a replacement is found, the executive chair will lead the company. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 27th September 2024. The bonus talks in North Bengal have finally concluded. The trade unions had asked for 19% as a bonus, have accepted 16%, taking cognizance of the distressed situation that most estates are facing. The meeting was attended by the trade unions, along with the representatives of planters associations via the Consultative Committee of Plantation Associations and local politicians. The statesman reported that this bonus will provide economic relief to about 275,000 workers, both temporary and contractual, across the Duars and Terai regions, and also support local economy with injection of funds. And the bonus is slated to be dispersed before 28th September. In other news, the Tea Research Association has introduced a new seed stock for TSS2, which is going to be a climate-resilient, climate-smart tea seed and can withstand high temperatures while yielding quality crop. Extreme heat has been impacting tea production in Assam and North Bengal, the two largest tea-producing regions in the country. And this prolonged heat dries soil and causes excess stress on the plants, reducing production of new leaf. So this new seed stock is quite welcome. The TRA also recently introduced microbial formulations developed to reduce excessive reliance on pesticides, and these formulations have been approved by the Central Insecticides Board. And lastly, coming on the back of National Chai Day, there's news that award-winning actor and stand-up comedian Hasan Minhaj has decided to invest in the New York-based Kolkata Chai Co. The company was founded by two brothers, Ayan and Anisa Nyal, to serve chai and raise more awareness of this Indian staple. And Hasan Minhaj joins the duo as investor and business partner. On the website, the brothers have said they started Kolkata Chai Co. to bring the authentic taste of masala chai to America. And with Minhaj joining them, it looks like the humble chai is finally getting its moment in the sun.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish@nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Tea is a principal source of livelihood for 9 million small and medium-sized producers who account for 60% of global tea production. According to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, they are the backbone of the sector. But cultivating only tea is not sustainable. According to the International Institute for Sustainable Development, quote, tea is extremely vulnerable to climate-related events, so it is vital to promote measures such as planting drought and stress-tolerant cultivars, diversifying production, and intercropping tea, end quote. Incorporating mixed cropping can lead to a more resilient, sustainable, and profitable tea farming system, especially for smallholders with limited resources who need to optimize their land use and reduce risk. Rural entrepreneurs Ashok Kurian and his son Rowan, who own and manage Balanore Plantations in South India, join us today to discuss the importance of intercropping to sustainable tea and coffee farms. Ashok Kurian is managing director at Balanore Plantations, which is headquartered in Bangalore, India. His son, Rowan, is the manager of corporate affairs for the company, which has holdings in tea and coffee, ornamental plants, roses, areca nut palm, pepper, and green timber. Balanore annually produces 625 metric tons of tea on 225 hectares, grows about 500 metric tons of Arabica and Robusta coffee, and produces 30 metric tons of mainly white pepper, as well as 40 metric tons of areca nuts. The plantation yields 700 to 1,000 trees annually. Separate holdings include 15 hectares of cut roses for export globally, and a plantation in Malappuram that produces 65 metric tons of rubber annually. Welcome to the Tea Biz podcast. This week, it's my great pleasure to introduce Ashok and Rowan, his son, Kurian, from South India. The farm Balanore has been well known for many, many years as a resource for not just tea, but for a lot of different crops, coffee, for example, and also timber. Ashok, I'm going to start with you and just ask you to describe your venture from the vantage of a rural entrepreneur.
Hi, Dan. Morning from India. We are a plantation company, which was started in 1937. And we were mainly at that time, both coffee and tea. Since then, we have diversified into growing other crops like pepper, areca nut, timber, and even trying to grow some fruit trees to be not mainly dependent on only the main crops of tea and coffee. We have done it fairly successfully, but not achieved scale, nor break even in regards to tea. We still having a tough time struggling with tea, where the labor requirement is huge and our terrain does not lend itself to mechanization. We will have to now try to develop the brand to see that we can add a little more value than sell a commodity.
Rowan, you're going to inherit your father's investment in the land and the business that he's established. Will you share with listeners your vision of the future?
Thank you, Dan, firstly, for giving me the opportunity to join you and my dad on the podcast. Yeah, the inheritance of the investment is a good thing, but it's going to be a tough journey for all of us. As you've been rightly mentioning, the tea industry has been struggling for a while. But we are quietly optimistic if we can overcome certain hurdles with regards to labor and start developing the new age technologies of harvesting. We do have a chance of improving the overall productivity as well as the realization with regards to the product that we produce, which is tea. Most tea growers need to pull together. We need to be united in our actions if we have to sustain. Right now, it looks like it is every man for himself. But one good thing is if you look at Karnataka in particular, growers are coming together. We have an association where we collate our data, our ideas, we share information. In fact, we're just organizing an area scientific conference, which we do every year, where we go to each other's estates and learn from each other on how we can overcome certain hardships which everyone is facing. I think that is something that our industry needs to do in totality if we want to move forward and improve on the overall quality of our produce. We have been noticing that earlier on, it used to be more quantity, 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 while sacrificing on the quality. Now we started to realize that quality is what sells and gives you a better price. So the focus has now moved from just quantity to getting a balance of quantity and quality. And automatically the realization is going up. So we are quietly optimistic, but also a little worried at the way things are going. It's not all doom and gloom. There is a little bit of sunshine at the end of it, but it is to see how we can sustain, to maintain, to see the sunrise to the top.
I love to hear you say that. The voice of the future are the folks who are young and energetic now and viewing the business as something that is worth their time and effort. And you see in so much of the world, the next generation simply abandons tea. At one point, tea and coffee were pretty much everything you did. How much does tea contribute towards your revenue and employment? And where do you think it's sustainable? What kind of annual yield, for example, does a farm have to produce to stay in business in the business of tea?
We were almost 50% tea and 50% coffee as regards to the total revenue that we generated. But acreage-wise, coffee is bigger than tea. And productivity-wise, tea produces more kgs per acre compared to coffee. But that's purely because of the yield tea has, because it's harvested throughout the year. The turnover does not really matter as far as agriculture is concerned. It all depends on your profitability per acre and the price per kilo that we have. And when it comes to labor deployment, our almost 60% of our labor is deployed in tea. It's a daily crop. It has to be harvested every 18 days. And mostly ours is semi-manual, using shears or motorized shears. From 2002 onwards, tea has been losing money and is being sustained by our other crops like coffee, pepper, arecanut, and timber that we grow. Turnover right now is about 15 crores Indian rupees, but turnover, like I said, is not an important factor. It's only what profit you make per kilo of produce that you grow.
Rowan, what's the most promising technology you see emerging?
In India, though we have 1.8 billion people, the biggest issue that we face is a labor shortage. Nobody wants to work on a tea estate. It's been a constant struggle for us to get a uniform labor force to work with us year in and year out. We have moved on to mechanical harvesting machines, single man operated machines where the worker is able to harvest easily double of what a shear harvester is able to do. It is a struggle for us because we are unable to convince the labor to use this machine.
He's just not generating a lot of revenue, and the economy in Europe slowing down, and just some very traditional ups and downs. There's way too much tea in the market from Africa, for example. What advice would you give fellow growers in the business who are contemplating or are currently involved in multi-cropping?
We originally thought about our business as only a beverage company, tea and coffee. We shifted from that, and my advice to farmers, small, not the large ones, is to consider yourself as an owner of the land. And you will find that there are portions of your estate which are not suitable for tea or coffee, but suitable for other crops. In India, what we've noticed is because of the terrain that we have started planting those areas with a little more density of shade trees, because timber will become a very, very valuable asset, because with EU making under the EUDR saying that you can't have more timber cut from forest areas, so we will be at an advantage to have timber grown in your coffee and tea estates and getting more revenue out of it. Each one has to develop his or her own advantage of the land that they have. For us, it is very clear that it will be timber, it will be pepper. Both are compatible with each other. In valleys where the water flows off from the estate, we would plant arecanut. We are not able to diversify into a large area of fruit trees because our land laws don't permit us to convert anything other than the crops which we are permitted to grow. So there is, as long as you don't get wedded to a single crop and say, we grew coffee in this land, we will continue to grow coffee, then you're limiting your opportunity. But coffee with fruit will be an ideal situation, because this kind of prices for coffee will not sustain for a long time. And as far as tea is concerned, it will be, our own estate has got 550 acres of tea land, which if I reduce it down to 375 acres, will produce the same quantum of leaf, but can get some other income from the remaining 140 acres, which will be viable to grow fruit trees, and labor requirement for those harvesting of fruit trees or cultivating will be much less than what we require for tea. Ultimately, there is scope for land. It all depends on the rules of your country or your state, and as well, and also whether you have the money to diversify before you get swamped by the unviability of a single monocrop.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.